moving along here, hour number two. Doug is on his way to L.A. I'll be flying there after the show. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. And as promised, we're going to talk some NBA basketball with Kurt Heelan. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter. I'll give you the Twitter handle in a second, but he's an NBA reporter for NBC Pro Basketball Talk, and it's always great when we can talk with Kurt. Kurt, it's Grant Napier. It's good to have you on. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Have a safe flight down, and thanks a lot for bringing the rain with you.
Yeah, well, I wish we could have some up here in Northern California because it has not rained even once in the month of February.
No, same here. I mean, the whole state, it's just been dry for so long. We'll take the rain. You know, I'm all good with it.
There you go. You can follow Kurt on Twitter at Basketball Talk. All right, so I want to start off talking about the Rockets. I'm skeptical about small ball. I don't think that gets it done in the playoffs, but we're going to find out because they're going to be in the playoffs. And then I got to read today, you know, Russell Westbrook saying, quote, "I think the refs, the fans, media, the NBA are put in a position now where I'm not really allowed to do much." Obviously talking about his ejection last night. I mean, why not blame Santa Claus while you're at it?
Is there anybody? I don't know. That looked like an ejection to me. Like he was pretty, I don't know. I will give him this. I don't know that the officiating is terribly consistent in terms of what gets you ejected and what doesn't night to night in the NBA, crew to crew. And that's just, you know, players, I'm sure if Doug were there, you know, he'd be able to speak to that. It's, you kind of have to adjust to the guys who are, hey, Scott Foster's there tonight. All right, quick trigger guy, better be a little more careful versus some of the other guys who are out there. That said, yeah, I'm with you, by the way. I am just not... I think that the Rockets are going to do really well in the regular season when you don't have time to prep for them. But when I look at them in the postseason, particularly against the top four teams, I mean, the Lakers and Clippers are just big.
Right.
They're just big, long teams. And then the other, you know, Utah rolls out Jokic. Denver rolls out Jokic and Utah rolls out Gobert. And those guys are going to be hard to deal with. Gobert is a better offensive player than people go, he's going to be a double-double.
No question.
All-Star game. Like, he's better than people think he is.
All right, so if this doesn't work, then what? I mean, like, does this change the way other – I mean, I guess let me ask the flip side of it because this is – Doug Christie and I were talking about this on the show. What happens if the Rockets win a couple of rounds and find themselves playing in the Western Conference Finals with this type of lineup? Is this once again going to be a domino effect where other teams are going, well, gee, you know what? We need to do that.
A little maybe. I mean, I think teams would start to be more open to it. But it's kind of a roster thing. I remember when everybody was going small, you know, really first starting this trend, and somebody asked Greg Popovich about it, and he goes, well, sure, if you give me all the guys to do it, I'll do it.
Sure.
But that's not the roster. At the time, I don't know if he still had Duncan on the roster. I'm trying to remember, but he had bigger, you know, he had LaMarcus Aldridge and other guys. He's like, that's just not what we're going to be. And it only works if you've got the right people. So it's easy to say, hey, we should all go small, but it's a lot easier to do that when you have James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who still goes out and gets a – might not be horribly efficient, but, man, the guy still goes and gets buckets. Like, it's easier to go small when you got those guys.
Kurt Heelan talking NBA basketball. In the West, who's the team right now? And, again, we have until March 1st where you can still tinker depending on who gets bought out and who's going to sign. Right now, who do you think's the top team in the conference?
Today, right now, look, the Lakers have been the best regular season team, but I still think the Clippers have the best playoff roster. I still think two elite two-way wings become really tough to deal with. I picked them before the season. I'll stick with them. I am concerned that they've played so little together as their core unit together that they just haven't built a lot of good habits yet. Like, they just haven't built... I mean, it feels like the Clippers have treated the regular season like a team that's won two titles already, and that they just got to flip the switch. And they're not that team. They haven't built those habits. And I wonder if that comes back to bite them.
Hmm. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that the Lakers are waving DeMarcus Cousins. I'm surprised it hadn't happened earlier. Obviously, he is not able to play. Would the team sign him? I just don't see why.
I don't know. If I can get him next season on a minimum deal or a non-guaranteed deal.
No, I'm talking about now for more.
For the rest of the season. He can't even play.
Right.
The only reason the Lakers kept him around is that salary could have been potentially useful in some trades, because that was the problem they were running into. It's not that they didn't want to make a deal. It's that Kyle Kuzma is the only player they had that's really going to draw a lot of interest, but he only makes $2 million. So who are you going to package with him without cutting into your core? And, you know, they don't want to give up Danny Green or anything.
Right.
So then it became, well, hey, we've got, you know, $3.5 million in dead salary essentially with Cousins gone. And I'm sure they talked to him and said, hey, if we can get somebody on the buyout market, you're gone.
Yeah. Well, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Kurt Heelan talking NBA. We were in Milwaukee right before the All-Star break. And I love watching that team, but I've been asking everyone that covers the NBA, because as much as I love Giannis like everyone else, I look at the number 62, which is his free throw percentage, and I wonder if that is their Achilles heel when the playoffs start, considering he's going to have the ball all the time. What happens in close games if he's going to the free throw line and he's shooting, you know, 61, 62%?
I think it's a valid point. I've still got end of game questions about them, and I think that the challenge with beating them in a series is that they're probably just going to crush you in a game or two. You're right, like kind of like the Warriors when they were at their peak a few years ago. Like they were going to be tough enough, but they were just going to blow your doors off a couple games, and now you got to beat them, you know, four out of five. But in those close games, you can foul him if it can. Will Brooke Lopez make the right play, knock down the shots? Eric Bledsoe's been up and down in the playoffs. Middleton's actually been very good in the playoffs for them, but they need those guys to step up on a consistent basis. And I'd like to believe they can. I'd like to believe their defense is going to work in the playoffs. But when they've been confronted with challenges in the past, when they've like, all right, we can take a, you know, we've got Kawhi Leonard, we can make Giannis's life really difficult now. What else have you got? They've really struggled with that, like what they go to next, a plan B type of thing. They haven't. That's where they kind of run into a wall, and I'm really curious to see what happens this time around. Like, are they better prepared for what happens when Giannis doesn't have it, or, you know, like you said, teams are just sending him to the line? Like, what is your alternative?
Is there a team right now that's either among the top eight in the East or the West that no one's talking about, that you could see being a dark horse, or is it just the favorites? I mean, are we talking about the Lakers, the Clippers? I personally wouldn't rule out the Nuggets. Is it the Bucks and the Raptors? And I don't know who else you'd put in there. How do you see it?
I'm just not sold on anybody else in the East. I think Miami's a player away, as much as I kind of like what they did at the deadline with Iguodala and Jay Crowder. They still feel a player short to me. Boston, I'm not. They're closer, but I'm just not sold. And so I don't know that there's anybody in the East. In the West, I'm trying to decide on Denver and maybe even Utah. Utah before the season, I thought on paper looked, you know, really good. They have not played. They haven't had the same lockdown defense, and their offense has been kind of up and down. So I'm a little less sold on them. Denver got off to a slow start. Nikola Jokic was admitted to his own, you know, admitted over the break. Like, look, I was out of shape. I had to lose 25 pounds. All that said, they've looked much better lately. They've defended better this year. That would probably be the way one dark horse. Like, if maybe they could pull it together and threaten the Lakers or Clippers. They would have to have a lot of things go right. Gary Harris would have to play a lot better. They'd have to have a lot of things kind of roll their way. But that's the one team I think potentially could, that like is on the cusp of doing it.
You know, I was curious about the way the league uses their rules with these buyouts, and you have to be on a roster by March 1st. We're seeing the Morrises, you know, obviously getting the Clippers better. Now we're hearing words about Markieff, but getting Marcus, I think, was a nice move for the Clippers. Is that good for the NBA?
I think it is. A player movement always seems to generate interest in the NBA for some reason.
Sure.
And also, the guys that are moving, when you talk about Marcus Morris might be the exception, and he was a trade deadline move. But like Markieff Morris, who's probably going to end up with the Clippers,
right.
And was it Jeff Green and everybody who ended up in Houston. when you think about what the impact of those guys are, generally the buyout guys, if you're the Lakers and you bring in Markieff, for example, what you really want is him to soak. I don't know how much of a playoff role he'll have, but if he can soak up a lot of minutes in March and I can get LeBron James and Anthony Davis a little more rest going into the playoffs, that's where the value is. And I think that that's what a lot of these guys are doing. I'm not sure how much anybody's going to lean on Jeff Green in the postseason.
No, you're right. You know,
how many
it's a good point.
They're really going to get. But if I can just get, and I think that that's fine for the NBA. If it ever got to the point that real talent was moving around, that'd be interesting. But I don't think real talent moves at the buyout. I mean, you get role players who are moving at the buyout.
Monday at the Staples Center, the memorial for Kobe Bryant. And I'm wondering, is this going to be more of a celebration, or is it going to be more of a sad 2-3 hour memorial? Is it going to be a mixture? Have you heard anything what is going to be going on specifically? And I don't want to say theme. That's not the right word. I'm at a loss for words right now, but you know where I'm getting at. Yeah. Is this going to be a celebration of Kobe Bryant's life, do you think?
I think that it'll be a little bit of a mix,
okay.
But I think that they're leaning that way. They're trying to. By the way, I thought the league did a really nice job with at the All-Star game with Magic speaking and Jennifer Hudson.
It was great.
And I think that that's a good tone to set. Where look, it's not going to be some sort of classic Irish wake. Like it's
sure.
Not
yeah.
But it should be a celebration more than that. And I believe that what I heard was that there was, I don't really have much on the way of detail. I heard that they leaned more that way than funeral. I hate to say funeral style.
No, I understand
service,
what you mean.
More
sure.
but more of a memorial style service. So it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. I mean, they are going to fill the place. It's going to be,
oh boy,
it's going to be interesting.
No question. Kurt Heelan joining us, talking about NBA basketball. I saw Memphis play last night, and listen, they're above where I think anyone projected them to be.
Yeah.
I think that they're doing a marvelous job at 28 and 27. First of all, they've got two really nice young players. They have been relatively injury-free. But with that said, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. So I'm looking at their schedule, and I don't see it. And so let's say I'm right. Who does make the playoffs as the eighth seed? If it's not them, Portland's going to be without Lillard for a while. I look at the Spurs team, Kurt, and I don't see it, although I've learned in the past not to ever count out Pop.
Exactly.
The wild card to me is New Orleans, if Zion Williamson continues to play the way he has. How do you see this?
First off, the other thing New Orleans has going for it, I mean, it has the most ground to make up. They also have the easiest remaining schedule
in the
NBA, and Memphis has the toughest. So that's the wild card. That's the one thing where if Memphis stumbles a little, and I think they will. Like you said, they play a lot of good teams, including they're down in Los Angeles. I think through the night of the Memorial, I think they play the Clippers, and they play the Lakers.
Yes, they play the Lakers tonight, and Memphis then plays the Clippers on Monday.
Monday. So, and that's just the start of a very tough run for them as they go out. And, you know, it's a little tough to predict the end of season because sometimes teams start there's some real garbage ball the last few, guys start getting rested a lot down the stretch, and it's a little tougher to predict. But they've got a really tough go of it, and I think you hit the nail on the head. To me, I'm never going to say the Spurs won't do it, but that one's a longer shot to me. It really comes down to me, how long is Lillard out?
Yes.
If Lillard misses 3 games, that's one thing. If Lillard misses 6 or 8 games,
they're done.
That becomes a much. I mean, they're just not. They're 10 points per 100 worse without him.
Yep.
They get beat by. I mean, and frankly, with him, they're basically even with the opponent. They've not been very good this year. Surprisingly, they really miss Yusuf Nurkic more than I think anybody.
Great point.
He was so good for them. But if he's gone, they're in a lot of for any extended period, so they're in trouble. So I'm curious. I would love to see New Orleans. But by the way, who wouldn't want to see New Orleans get all the way back? So Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram.
Oh my gosh!
Go with the Lakers in the playoffs. Like that would just be a.
Yeah.
That would be. Let's put it this way, Grant. I don't think that one ends up buried on NBA TV.
I'll tell you this: that might be the highest rated first round series ever, and I really mean that.
Yeah, no, it would be fascinating, and New Orleans would have little to no chance to win that series.
Correct.
But man, it would be fun to watch.
You know, speaking of the, you know, I saw Morant last night. Be honest, I have not seen Zion Williamson play in person yet. We have them twice on the schedule, and I can't wait. Is he even better than we thought he would be?
Zion or Morant?
Zion Williamson.
He might be. He has been really, really it fits with what they need in a lot of ways. You can see how they built this team to kind of fit what he needs in terms of him diving to the rim really starts to open up things for their shooters and forces defenders to drop and opens up more room for even Brandon Ingram, who found a jumper. Like, Brandon Ingram can shoot now, and that's been a big part of his renaissance.
Sure.
But you know, they've got J.J. Redick and they've got, you know, Jrue Holiday and these guys who can shoot out there. So things just look better for them. He's a great fit, but he's also – guy just finishes. He's athletic. He really does make nice passes. You can see the whole thing coming together for him. And the other thing you watch, that guy has the quickest second jump I think I've ever seen. I'm really curious if they ever got him out to – was it the place in Santa Barbara, PS, the science place out in Santa Barbara, where they measure all that
stuff?
Because that is the – that guy gets a ridiculous percentage of his own rebounds, and he's just bouncy. That spring is so fast. So I'd be curious to know what his second leap is, because I bet it's faster and higher than just about anybody in the league.
It must be something to do, because Marvin Bagley is the same way. Now, Marvin's only played in 13 games this year, and I've been doing the NBA for 32 years, and I got to tell you, there's no player I've ever seen that's got a quicker second jump than Marvin. It's amazing when you see it in person. Yeah. It's just kind of like, wait a minute, how did that happen? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I knew exactly. And we were just saying the other day when the news came out and I wrote up the note that Marvin was going to miss time. I'm like, we really miss him. And it's just really tough to judge on where, you know, like the Kings' development without and everything that's gone on. It's like, if he's not on the floor, they're just not the same team.
No, they're not. And he's only played in 13 games. And not to, you know, dwell on this, you had De'Aaron Fox basically missed 19 games. You have had now Rashawn Holmes, who, believe it or not, was the Kings' best player this year. He's now going on, what, I think 15 games. I understand that fans don't want to hear this, Kurt, and I know you do this for a living. I'm not making excuses. It's the reality of the situation. The Kings aren't good enough where you can lose all these players and still be relevant in the playoffs. It's just not being realistic.
No, for them to make a playoff chase, and even in this down, in the kind of down bottom of the West this year, it was going to require guys, you know, look, you've got to stay healthy. They don't have the kind of depth and just the kind of veteran presence to pull that off. And there are those years. Look, man, every team has.
Yes.
The Warriors are going through it. Every team has years where it's just, hey, everybody's injured. Everybody's, you know, it's the way it goes. And you just... I don't know that you start to tinker or toy with the medical staff until it happens a few years in a row, and then you start to wonder what's going on. But one-year fluky things, man, just especially the types of injuries they've had. It's not like it's been chronic-y stuff. So.
Before we let you go, after what we witnessed in Chicago on Sunday, are you in the camp that was really good for the NBA? Because there were a lot of criticism leading up to it. Gee, what are they doing? It's gimmicky, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
People didn't say that after the game, did they?
No, because the guys actually tried.
Right?
Like, that was like, for, I mean, I've been on the, I'm completely on board. I was on board with trying it. I wasn't sure if it was really going to work, but I was on board with trying it because as somebody who's been to a lot of All-Star games, borderline unwatchable. The game itself, like the weekend is a great experience. It's a great selling point for the NBA. And sure, you get to see incredible players making incredibly athletic plays, but as basketball, it was just horrible. And it wasn't this time. Like in the fourth quarter, it wasn't really pretty because, you know, it got a little. There was some rust. I don't want to suggest that there might have been players hungover. It is possible that there were players hungover. It's All-Star weekend,
right?
But that said, like, they were drawing charges and barking at the officials, and it got serious in the fourth. And it was a lot of fun. It'll be back. It'll be interesting to see how they tweak it for next year. But it's going to be back. And I thought it added a lot to the game. It made it, like I said, made it watchable.
Kurt, always a pleasure when you give us the time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Grant. I'll talk to you. Hey, have a safe trip down here.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's Kurt Helin joining us talking about basketball. We'll come back. I'll give you more information on the DeMarcus Cousins story. That's next on Sports 1140. Back to the DeMarcus Cousins story. Adrian Wojnarowski first reporting that the Lakers are waiving DeMarcus Cousins. And it looks like they're going to wait until Sunday night to waive him, according to Bobby Marks, who is a front office insider for ESPN and the NBA, former front office executive. They're waiting until Sunday night after Markieff Morris clears waivers. Morris will be signing with the Lakers. All right? So right now, DeMarcus Cousins has roughly $1 million left on his $3.5 million contract. A team that would claim him would have non-bird rights and could offer him a contract up to $4.2 million, which I don't think there's anyone in the world that's going to give DeMarcus Cousins any type of money until he can prove that he can run up and down the court and play basketball, which he can't right now. So that's not realistic. It's not realistic. But again, Woj saying that the Lakers are going to waive Cousins. And again, as Kurt Heelan said, it's a no-brainer. You need to have a roster spot. He's not able to play. It's the most logical move to make for the Lakers. And here's the other deal. Even if he could play, they're not going to play him anyway. They're 41-12. They're not messing around with DeMarcus Cousins trying to fit him in if the playoffs were to begin and he could play. That's just not a realistic situation. So, again, Adrian Wojnarowski was the first to report that. Speaking of the Lakers, their game that was postponed against the Clippers in the wake of the Kobe Bryant tragedy has been rescheduled from January 28th to April 9th. So they will make up that game on April 9th. All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And because I know that there are people out there that are delusional. No, is the answer to your question. I'm not even going to ask the question. I'm only going to give you the answer. No. N-O. No. So don't call up and ask, because the answer to your question is no. N-O. Although, based on a few of the people that have hit me up on Twitter the last couple days, they would spell it K-N-O-W. All right? But me, N-O. So if you call me up and you ask the question, the answer is N-O. Not even going to ask the question. I'm only going to answer it. No. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Hey, Jay, I got a deal for you. I know you're looking to go somewhere. Delta One business class to Tokyo. 90,000 sky miles round trip. That's unbelievable. There you go. 339-1140. Go over there in the Olympics.
Got to tell me what that equals as far as money. Like how much? It's on how much I buy the points for?
Yeah, it depends. Yes, that's correct. That's a great question. The value, I can't, without knowing how you accumulated the points or how you're going to accumulate the points, I wouldn't be able to answer that.
So technically, like, I know you've done it a few times where they've had sales on points and steered me to do it a few times, which I've done. Now, when they have sales, like 35% off on points, stuff like that, if I caught something like that, I could beat it like you did. I believe you did it.
Okay, I'll give you an example. You can buy Alaska. It's probably the best frequent flyer program in the world. You 4 times a year, they have bonuses where you can buy miles and get generally a 40 to 50% bonus. So if you buy 60,000 miles, you will then get a bonus of 30,000 for a total of 90,000. One way from anywhere in the United States to Hong Kong on Cathay Pacific business class is 50,000 miles and first class is 70,000 miles. The cost of a one-way ticket on Cathay Pacific in first class could be as much as $10,000. Now, there has to be availability, which if you look and you have, you're flexible with your dates, you can find it. You will automatically be able to go on business class. That is a bargain. So for basically less than $2,000 out of your pocket, you could fly a round trip on Cathay Pacific, which is a great product, business class, okay, round trip from San Francisco or L.A. or Seattle or Chicago or New York, or however you want to go, for less than $2,000. The cost of a business class ticket round trip, if you just were going to go book it online, would probably cost you $7,000 to $8,000. How about that? All right. We got calls to get to. We'll do it at 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Or you could be like Chris Verlod. You could pay $323, sit in the very last row of coach on your British Airways 747. But you do get a bottle of red wine, he said. And so for him, he was happy. He was happy. He got a bottle of red wine. They gave it to him. He was happy. You know? And he had some money left over. He had a couple of, he could transfer his money to get some pounds and buy a couple of pops when he got over there. So it worked out good for Chris. All right, let's get to David. Hello, David.
Hey, Grant. Just wanted to ask you, in the Western Conference, to secure the eighth spot for any of the teams that are in the race, including the Kings, how many wins?
41.
41?
Mike, I think so 41. Yep.
So the Kings would need 17 then?
They have 22 wins right now, so they would need 19.
And is there any chance you see that happening based on their recent?
No.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. When I say is there any chance, there's always a chance. But I got to be realistic here. Okay, you got to be realistic. There's 27 games left. Do you honestly think the Kings are going 19-8? Here are the games that I think you can all just pencil in as losses, okay? And again, I'm going to end up being wrong, but automatic losses. Tomorrow, okay? That's one. The Lakers on April 4th is two. And I'm not going in chronological order. I'm just doing this by looking at the schedule, all right? Toronto, three. Now, could they beat Toronto at home? They could, but I got to be realistic about this. Oklahoma City on the road, very tough game. Could they win it? They could win it, but that's a game that I think they're going to have a difficult time winning. New Orleans on the road, a back-to-back, okay, at Orlando, at New Orleans. I think they're going to lose that game. Clippers at home, loss. At Denver, loss. All the other games, I would at least give them a chance, but I don't see 19 wins out of that. Am I going to see 19 wins? That would mean that on this four-game road trip, you'd have to go 3-1, in my opinion. Then you come home and play Detroit. That's got to be a win. Then you play Washington at home. That has to be a win. Then you have Philadelphia at home. Could you get on a roll and get hot? Only if you really sizzle on this road trip. Because when you get to the final week of the season, the Kings are at Denver on a Saturday, at the Lakers on a Tuesday, at home against Golden State. Maybe Denver and the Lakers don't have anything to play for. Maybe they don't play their guys that many minutes. Maybe that changes a couple of things. But, I mean, I got to be fair about this. I would love to see the Kings go 19-9. I think it would be great. But I think it's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And as I said last hour, the one issue facing the Kings right now is they're not in ninth place. They're in 12th place, which means that New Orleans, San Antonio, and Portland are ahead of them. And Memphis, by the way. So you would have to then finish ahead of four teams, not just one team. That's what makes it so difficult. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you're tied with Phoenix at 22-33. I don't think Phoenix is going anywhere. But it's interesting when you look at these teams. Portland, they've lost two in a row. Lillard not playing tonight, hurt. Spurs have lost 7 of 10. New Orleans, they've won 6 of their last 10. Kings have won 6 of their last 10. Out of those teams, Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Sacramento, which team is better suited to get on a roll? And Kurt Heelan was just on with us, and he said New Orleans, for a variety of reasons. One, and the first thing he looked at, was they have the easiest schedule. They have the easiest schedule. They're playing at Portland tonight. They don't have to see Lillard. Then they're at Golden State on Sunday. Then they're at the Lakers. They have the Lakers at home. Their longest road trip remaining on the season is in March at Minnesota, 3 days off, at Sacramento, ESPN. 2 days off at Utah, then the next day at the Clippers. That's their toughest road trip remaining. They got an easy road trip, when I say easy, compared to that, at the end of March, at Orlando, at Atlanta, at Washington, at San Antonio. So, and they have a very, very easy April schedule. At Washington, at San Antonio, home Charlotte, home Phoenix, home Philly, at Washington, at San Antonio. I could see them getting on a roll. I could see that happening. Now, they play Memphis twice. They have to win both those games. They play Memphis on the 21st in Tennessee. They play Memphis at home on the 24th. They have to win both those games. You got to be realistic about this. They got to win both those games. They have to beat Portland tonight, especially without Lillard. That's got to be an automatic win if you're going to make a move here. I could see them getting on a little bit of a roll. They got a pretty good lineup. And with the way Williamson is looking, he looks like the real deal, doesn't he? That guy, that young man's got some talent. All right. Don't forget, Doug Christie is going to join me at 5 o'clock. And then we are going to talk some baseball at 5:30. I just got a text message from my buddy Tony. He said, you are spot on with Cathay. You tell him, Grant. That's what I'm here for. It's a good deal right there. 50,000 miles, business class. Thank you very much. Little herringbone configuration. Turn the lights off. Flatbed, get some nice rest. Good service. 20,000 more miles, Chris. You could be sitting up front. Boy, it's beautiful up front on Cathay Pacific. That's the way to fly. That's the way to do it. Now, if you want to go to London, Chris, you're going to have to go the long way. You have to go through Asia first. And right now, I mean, you got to be honest. You got to be extremely careful with the coronavirus. So I would suggest for you, Chris, just go on British Airways. Go the other way. It's sad what's going on over there, boy. It's, sad for the people, but sad for the hospitality industry, the airlines. I saw Norwegian Cruises. I've just canceled all of their summer itineraries in Asia. Wow. That's all I can say as well. We'll be right back on Sports 1140. Christie will join us at 5 o'clock, coming to us from Los Angeles. You know, we were talking about Zion Williamson. Based on what you've seen right now, if you were starting a team and I said you only could choose Morant or Williamson, who are you taking? Now, obviously, they don't play the same position, and that would factor into it because point guard is the most important position in the league. But if you think about Zion Williamson, and the thing that would scare me is his body and the susceptibility to injuries just because of physics. I think Williamson is a far superior basketball player in terms of special, okay, if I can use that adjective. But I'm probably taking Morant because of the position he plays and the fact that I think he's less susceptible to a long-term injury. That's how I would look at that. All right, again, talking about players on the move in the NBA. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that the Lakers are going to waive DeMarcus Cousins and sign Markieff Morris. The Lakers getting Morris just for depth, I think it really helps them that much. It's more of a depth deal. That is expected to happen on Sunday. Something else that's going on in the sports world, and I shouldn't say sports world, I should say society, because it's not the sports world, it's everywhere. And again, I always talk about this with social media. Anyone can get on social media. You can say whatever you want, for the most part, with little or no repercussion. I mean, Twitter could ban you, I guess. But the story, as it relates to the Houston Astros, and we're going to talk about this at 5:30. I get the fact that people are furious at the Astros, disappointed, won't watch baseball again. I could understand that. But death threats? Do you see what Josh Reddick of the Houston Astros said today? This is unbelievable. I will kill your family. I will kill your kids. How about that? Is that just unbelievable? Josh Reddick, by the way, who was very adamant about not cheating, that he would not stand for it. That's not what he was about. Was talking about it could be very dangerous outside of the ballpark to even bring your family. He said there are ways to add security to a lot of places on the road, whether it be in our hotels, on the way to the field, at the field, obviously being a lot more hostile environment, be a little crazier, I think. Also at the hotels, because you see a lot of people line up at our hotels. They know where we stay. They know what times we usually go to the ballpark and what time we get back. For me, myself, having almost five-month-old boys, it's going to be scary because my wife is going to go to, or because my wife is going to go and want to come on a lot of road trips just because wanting to have my help in raising them and do our parenting thing. So it is definitely something you can think about every night. It's incredible. Death threats? I mean, you know, the gutless individuals that are hiding behind a burner account. I will kill your family. I will kill your kids. I would say that I'm surprised, but I'm not. I mean, some of the things that I see as it relates to the Kings on social media makes me realize there are a lot of sick people out there. A lot of people that are brainless, stupid. And when you see things like this, you know, the fact that someone even can contemplate sending a message to somebody stating that, I don't even know where to go. All right, if you want to call the program today, 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Can somebody get a hold of Carmichael Dave? I know he's out in the middle of the Caribbean on his cruise ship to make sure he's not getting ready to jump off the ship now that his buddy DeMarcus Cousins is getting waived. Can someone please throw him a life jacket? I would think that he would be in a state of complete mourning and complete disarray on a cruise ship. That rest of the passengers may not be safe on that ship. Can we please check in with Carmichael Dave to make sure that he's going to be okay? Could someone please do that for me? I don't know how you would get a hold of somebody in the middle of the sea, but I'm worried for him. This could be a traumatic day for Carmichael Dave, and I want to make sure that he's okay, considering that he is enjoying the end of his vacation. He will be back in this studio on Monday. I want to make sure that he gets back safely. I want to make sure that his brain is functioning. Well, that's never happened where his brain's functioning properly, but you know what I mean. I'm nervous for him. Can we please check on him? Thank you very much. All right, speaking of people that work here, Doug Christie works here. He's in L.A. He'll join me next right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.